On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys. It's happening. Oh, my God, guys. Oh, my God. I wish you all were here.
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No.
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat. Now he takes off the shirt. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
This is going great.
This is Tall Can Audio.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back into an all-new episode of the Tall Can Audio Podcast. Matt Robinson here with you in our studio in beautiful Bytown, Canada. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio, Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio, and we are joined today by the Sixth Sense, Graham Nichols. How's it going today, man?
Not too bad. How are you?
No complaints. We are on the eve of the Senators dropping the puck on their season against the wonderful Toronto Maple Leafs. What's your, I guess, excitement level kind of on a 1 to 10 level on getting this up and going?
I think it's just a 10 in terms of just, well, assuming the games are going to happen on Friday and Saturday, the way the province is going. Jeez.
That's, I think, true. It's a 10, this is all, you know? This is all day by day.
You know, it's been 311 games. I think on Friday it'll be 311 game or 311 days between games. So, you know, I think that's like what, like 60% of an Alexi Yashin holdout. So I think it's been a long time. So everybody's geared up. You know, you look at guys like Josh Norris and Tim Stützle. They've cracked the roster. They're going to be the lineup opening night. And I think you're starting to see the integration of some of these young kids that, you know, who have been lauded and have kind of shown that they can be like good NHL prospects. I think just from, you know, just a newness and, hey, here's some shiny new toys to distract us from what could be a bad season and the losing season. I think everybody's looking forward to watching the integration of these young kids. And I think we're just so desperate for hockey and just something to take our minds off of what's going on around in the world today that I think everybody's looking forward to it.
I skipped something extremely important at the beginning of the show. Did you bring something in to sip on? Attaboy. What do we got today?
Dos Jefes, Stalwart Brewing Company.
Oh, that's a nice beer. I tried that one maybe back in the spring, I think, for the first time. Have you had it before, or is this the first time you've tried it?
No, I've had it before. I love Stalwart. It's one of my favorite breweries in the greater Ottawa area. So if you haven't had it, for people listening, give them an order. It's a great brewery. They have a bunch of different stuff. Lots of hoppy stuff if you like hops, and highly recommend it.
Tell us a little bit about this one tonight that you're drinking.
So Dos Jefes is a grapefruit vanilla IPA.
Ooh.
Yeah, very fancy.
Yes. I am into one I've had on the show multiple times, and this is called the Raven from the Old Flame Brewing Company. They're at a Port Perry just north of my hometown in Oshawa, and their naming scheme, you know, from the Old Flame Brewing Company, it's a blonde, it's a red, it's a dirty blonde. It's all the girls maybe you dated in high school or college or whatever. The Raven here, though, is my favorite. It's kind of their brown ale. Not quite to a stout, but just shy of that. And so just for sitting around doing a pod like this, I like going to it. And my sister hooked me up with some of that for Christmas, knowing that I don't get down there too often anymore. So she sent some of that along. So that's what I'm riding with tonight. Did you get to try much over the holidays, or anything new, or anything that stuck out to you?
No, it's a lot of old hat, like a lot of Ridge Rock, a lot of Stalwart, some Big Rig, Dominion City, but just the standard stuff, some Beyond the Pale as well. And I should, I don't know. There's some breweries in the city I haven't checked out in a while that I'd like to get back to, like Tooth and Nail and
right.
And yeah, I'd like to give some of their stuff a go.
Ashton's the one that I keep hearing I got to try. I've never tried their stuff. I know Steve Lloyd's all about the Ashton Brewing Company.
Yeah, their Ashton stuff is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't like, yeah, if you get an opportunity and this all kind of calms down in the in the summertime, maybe we can go for a beer or something like
That'd be awesome.
Highly recommended if you're heading out West End. So
Dougie didn't tell us when he was making his big crackdown this week on whether the brewery deliveries are going to be allowed to continue. I sure hope so, man. It's kind of a lifeline here.
I think I saw a Kitchissippi tweet out that they were.
Okay.
So, I know it's funny because I posted on Twitter this afternoon, like Calabogie made a delivery to my house this afternoon. And it was like right as it coincided with the lockdown. It was like the best timing in the world because you get super depressed about what's going on. You're like, oh, beer's here. Okay, perfect.
Exactly. I guess to kind of get back to what we were talking about, is there any kind of sense for you? And this happened to me, and I knew it would going into it, with the World Juniors, where I was like, God, I'm glad it's back. I'm glad they're doing it. I don't think they should be doing it, right? Like, if you're going to play, I'm going to watch. But if I'd had a vote, I would have said we probably shouldn't do this. Do you think, you know, when the Sens finally do drop the puck on Friday, is it a guilty watch at all for you? Or is it just kind of, well, whatever, they're going ahead. Let's see what happens here and take it for the distraction that it is.
Yeah, it's a bit of both, right? Like, I don't know. Like, the part of me feels like, you know, if you adhere to the protocols and you quarantine and everything's okay, and as long as you stay isolated and sheltered and you know, you're checking your boxes, and I think it's okay. But at the same time, you look at a lot of what's going on in everybody's everyday life. And you kind of wonder, it's like, okay, they're shutting everything down, but hockey still go for Friday night? It's okay.
A state of emergency that the NHL rolls
yeah,
on.
And it's just, you know, it's... It is what it is, and I'm not gonna begrudge it if they do cancel it or if it does go ahead. Like, it's just, it'd be so nice to watch it, but at the same time, if they shut it down, I wouldn't be angry at all. I totally understand it, but it's one of those things. It's just, it's a function of where we are at right now as a society trying to deal with this.
An essential service in Canada only is the National Hockey League, but we'll take it for a bit of a distraction. I did see some video. I believe it was Brent Wallace on Monday night was doing a fair bit of video from the Senators' final scrimmage before they named their team. And I got to tell you, in an empty building like that, that horn is every bit as obnoxious as anything I've ever heard. I was so sick of the horn in Edmonton during the World Juniors in an empty bit. Like, I think it was the way it echoed through an empty building like that. And it just, I guess also when a team's putting up 16 goals on a half a team that's playing against them, it just became a bit much, man. And obviously as a Leaf fan, I'm programmed to hate that horn as it is, but man, it was extra jarring when I was hearing it Monday night in an empty arena like that.
I think everybody was just happy to see that Brent Wallace was actually recording footage of the games, because that is all we had to go by. There was nothing. And you know, you look at some of the TSN channels and you see like the Leafs are playing.
Yes.
And
province wide. God love them.
everybody in the city is just like, hey, Ottawa, what do you got going on for the scrimmage? The inner squad scrimmage. What's going on? Yeah. And it's just, there's nothing. And you're living vicariously. Get,
like, a Facebook live or anything.
Yeah. Like, or just like someone bring a really nice webcam, yes, set it up, and then stream it. And it's frustrating because, you know, like, we live in this modern era where everybody's like craving information all the time. And everybody's so ramped up for this season because it's been so long, and it just seems like they're doing the bare minimum. But at the same time, I think everybody kind of recognized that, you know, Ottawa is probably one of the most understaffed leagues the most understaffed teams in the league. And we're not far away from games, so it's not the end of the world that we're not seeing games. But I think it's just a good sign that everybody's kind of ramped up for the season to start, and everybody's excited for Senators hockey.
It did seem very Sens. I think it was Bonks Mullet that pointed out, like, that everybody has demanded these new jerseys for as long as, you know, maybe since they went away, and the first time anybody got to see them was through like a shitty portrait video from somebody's phone. Like, I mean, people had seen them, but on the ice, right? Like, they seen them flying around and whatever. So that did seem like a very Sens thing to have happen. But last thing, maybe on the uniforms or on the, I guess just before we fired up, the Senators put out a tweet that I guess they've made a final decision, or Tim Stützle has changed the way it's going to be the German way of spelling his name now. What did you see there, just in terms of, I guess you can return and get a refund, or how's this going to work if you've already bought your Stützle jersey?
Yeah, it looks like Senators Communications, or the organization, its actual Twitter feed said, you know, if you've already bought like a Tim Stützle jersey with the North American spelling, then we'll be happy to change it back to what's
and I mean, that can only happen to them, right? It's not even their fault. He's decided, after whatever, this is how he wants it done. But I mean, you're just kind of like, of course, like, it's just another thing for Ottawa before the season starts.
No, I know. And like, don't you like those like enunciations where it's like, even like for the Francophone players or anyone else, like, you know, you get the accent grabs or accent they use, and it just, why not just, why do you have to like make everything the Anglophone spelling? You
right.
know, it's just appeal to the players, make it a worldly game. Like, yeah, you have to make hockey an appealable sport and just appeal to the players. It's the way that their name is spelled, and just adhere to it. It's not a difficult thing. Just do it.
That's his name, right? So, yeah. I mean, clear this up for us. What is now the official spelling that we are officially going with from here on in?
S-T-U with an umlaut, and then T-Z-L-E.
Okay, so we've scraped that extra E out of there, or that sometimes was showing up, and we've got the accent over the U. All right, that's what we're rolling with. I don't even know how to find that on my keyboard. So
I think it's like alt, hold alt, and then numlock on your number pad, and then it's like 0252.
Sure. I think he's just going to have to forgive my occasional tweet that misspells his name.
Or just copy and paste off the internet.
That's how we're going to do this. They did make the roster official now. What were, you know, nothing shocking that came from it, but what was maybe the most noteworthy omission, or somebody who made the team that maybe you didn't expect would, when you first saw the official roster, what did you think?
I think just looking at the line combinations practice this morning, even before the roster was announced, I think if you look at Josh Norris playing alongside Brady Tkachuk and Drake Batherson, I think that is a huge unexpected swerve, right? You're talking mm-hmm. about, you know, like, Josh Norris isn't your like prototypical freshman NHLer, right? Like, he's a little bit older. He went to college. He played one professional season already down in Belleville, and had a successful year. He's one of the top five scorers in the league, led to all rookies in scoring. Exceptional two-way player. And for him to step into the lineup right away and be paired with Brady Tkachuk and Drake Batherson,
yeah.
I think it speaks volumes about the level of trust that some of these kids are getting, like Norris and Batherson. I thought for sure that they would shelter Batherson a little bit. He's not really known as being like a defensive player, but for him to get top 6 minutes playing with Tkachuk, I think that's a huge vote of confidence for him. And I thought for sure that Connor Brown would have been earmarked for the top six, and that's not necessarily the case. And the second line, nothing really surprising there. They already said that Tim Stützle was going to be playing with Dadonov a little bit. And or did I screw that up? And I'm just trying to think now. It's like my memory's like,
wasn't it Dadonov on the two wings with Stepan in the middle, or Dadonov and Stützle?
But then they were talking about Dadonov playing with Tkachuk. So I don't even know. Well, it changes all around the time. So
I know Ian Mendez in The Athletic on Tuesday was calling it the stepdad line, because he had Stepan, Dadonov, and then the kid, right?
So okay, perfect. So if that's the case, then you know, you're talking about Stützle having a good finisher in Dadonov on the line, right?
Yep.
And, you know, you look at some of the success that Dadonov's had in Florida playing alongside Jonathan Huberdeau. And Huberdeau's an exceptional playmaker who fed Dadonov in the bumper position, just in the slot in front of the net. And Dadonov's got great finishing ability when he gets the puck in that area. So if Stützle can feed off that a little bit, he's playing with some skill, which is great to see off the hop. You know, you look at some of the guys who've cracked in Ottawa's roster the last number of years, and they haven't necessarily had a lot of great skill to play with. So I think for some of these kids to step in right away, play with like good players who've had success in this league before, and guys like Tkachuk, Dadonov, Stepan, even though he's in kind of like the declining age phase of his career, I think it's not a bad place to be. And I thought for sure that these kids would be insulated a little bit more, but they're thrown in the wolves as part of the top six. And that's a huge thing to look forward to for Ottawa for the first two games of the season, at least.
Well, and maybe you've answered my question already there. Do you like that approach? Would that be your approach to get them all in there and it's kind of sink or swim, or would you look to shelter them a little more? I know some of them aren't that young anymore, right? So maybe it is time to see if you can do it or you can't, but you know, what did you kind of think of the approach?
I'm kind of surprised, because if you look at Ottawa's bottom six, it's kind of the opposite effect, right? Yeah. Like, I thought a guy like Logan Brand would have an opportunity to crack this roster, but it looks like he's going to start the season on the taxi squad. So it's same with Eric Brandstrom. Like, he's, you know, he's not going to have a chance to start the season with the Senators either. So, you know, you have your Norris, you have your Stützle, who are going to crack the roster right away, but they're playing in skill positions. And Ottawa seems to be content to roll, you know, four lines with a lot of veteran talent, and they're going to see where it takes them. And, you know, you look at like Rudolph Bosters, for example, who was lost to waivers today in San Jose. And you look at some of the guys playing ahead of him, and you kind of wonder from an asset management perspective, you know, like if Alex Galchenyuk is benched for the opening game of the season, that might raise some eyebrows, or even a Colin White, who might not even have a chance to crack the lineup for the first game because, you know, Cedric Paquette, Austin Watson, and, God, who's the fourth line center? Artem Anisimov. Mm-hmm. If those guys are playing ahead of him for the first game, it's going to raise eyebrows, because he committed this long-term contract to Colin White. And, you know, I think he's a much more valuable player than someone like Artem Anisimov. You have these one-year veteran placeholders who are just there. And I know it's one game, and it's not the be-all, end-all, and it's just like a micro fraction of the season. And, you know, it's not the be-all, end-all. But at the same time, I think it's a little bit concerning.
What do you make of what's happening with Colin White? They did give him the contract, and maybe it was a bit of a reach. I don't know how you felt about it at the time, but he's not somebody like, this has sort of been my concern for a while, or at least with the Derek Stepan trade. It felt like you were blocking somebody unnecessarily. And I know you felt the same way. I read, was following you on Twitter kind of when the deal happened, but they're not. Do you think they're giving up on this kid already? Or like, what do you make of the fact that he's clearly now no better than, I guess, the fourth line center?
For me, I think the problem started in his first season. He had a successful first season playing alongside Mark Stone and Brady Tkachuk, right?
Yeah.
And he put up a 41-point season, and he raised concerns going into his contract, negotiations. You know, he's a young player who played his first season with two guys who drove possession and could put up points, in Mark Stone and Tkachuk. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just one of those situations where you see it all the time in hockey, where like guys pump up the value of players playing around them. It happens all the time. And with Colin White, I think it was just kind of a function of where his contract negotiations came up in terms of where a lot of veterans were leaving the team when their contract negotiations kind of went by the wayside. Like guys like Erik Karlsson, guys like Mark Stone, Kyle Turris, go down the list of guys who left this organization as they were about to hit unrestricted free agency. And I think with Colin White, he had a successful first year, and the organization rewarded him with a long-term contract that there were red flags there. There were significant red flags there, but because a lot of players left, they wanted kind of one of those contracts that they could show fans that, hey guys, players want to stay in Ottawa. Yeah. Meanwhile, like, it's a little bit of intellectual dishonesty, because Colin White was a restricted free agent who had only played in the league 1 year. And, you know, it's just one of those situations where Colin White didn't have a ton of leverage. You didn't need to reward him with a long-term deal. You could have easily just given him a 1 or 2 year bridge deal, saying, all right, you had success with Mark Stone. Mark Stone is no longer here. You got to show us that you can do this without him.
Right.
And I think that would have been the safe approach. And that's what I argued for at the time. And obviously that's not the way it happened. And we're kind of at this situation where he's getting boxed out of jobs by veterans who aren't really that good, guys like Artem Anisimov. And it's just one of those situations where you kind of feel bad for the player, because I think he's not a first line player. I don't think the offense is ever going to play up. I think like the first year he was insulated, his point production could be inflated because of guys like Mark Stone and Brady Tkachuk. But I think if you look at Colin White's contributions, he's a good defender, and mm-hmm. he does some things really well. He's just miscast as a first line player, and you know, and there's nothing wrong with having a third line player you can play effectively. It's just put him in a role and surround him with some talent. And unfortunately, they haven't done that to this point. And
so contract aside, you still want him around and just maybe play down a little bit. Like, to me, that guy can still play on at least this year's Ottawa Senators third line or something like that, right? Like, he can still contribute something.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I think he deserves that opportunity, because I just think like, if where the team is at in its development curve, they're still kind of trying to feel out how good some of these young players are. Right. And, and Colin White's one of those guys. And I think you have to give that guy every opportunity to prove what he isn't before you decide what he is. And
Yeah.
I'm just kind of empathetic towards the player because I think he deserves just a little bit more.
What do we make of this blue line? Because you referenced Brännström a little while ago. At the time of the Mark Stone trade, obviously it was going to be hard to ever win that deal. But I felt at the time, and I think like most people, getting Brännström back was a huge chip, right? Like that was a coup. And you're like, if you were going to make this move, you had to get that guy. And it so far hasn't panned out. Do you feel similar with him that you do with Colin White, and that he hasn't been given enough opportunity, or has he not shown enough yet, in your opinion?
I think he's just one of those players. He's kind of like Mike Riley in the sense that he's a good puck driver. Like he can move the puck. He can transition it from defense to offense really well. He moves it really well. He could be a power play contributor, but like in terms of defensive aptitude, I think he's still like one of those young players where his miscues kind of are magnified with the coaching staff and with fans. And, you know, he's just one of those players who's just, it's going to take him a little bit of time to get the confidence of the coaching staff to like live with his mistakes and play him regular minutes at the NHL level. But the thing that's kind of concerning is that he wants to play his offside. The coaching staff and management want him to play his natural left side. And I think if you're projecting forward, the Senators have Thomas Chabot locked in long-term. They just drafted Jake Sanderson fifth overall. So the way the organization has been talking, Sanderson's a guy that they project to like fit into the roster towards the end of the year once his university days at Dakota are done. So if Sanderson comes onto the roster late this season, then all of a sudden you're talking about Erik Brännström as a potential third line power play guy and or third pairing power play guy. And it's a little bit frustrating to kind of look at a trade chip like that or a prospect like that and see him be relegated to the minors, because I think at some point the organization needs to play him regular minutes at the NHL level and see what he is. And you look at the guys on the right side, you know, whether it's an Erica Branson and Nikita Zaitsev or a Josh Brown, like they're different kind of defenders, right? Like if you look at Ottawa's left side, they have Chabot and Mike Riley, guys who can move the puck. But then you talk about a Braden Coburn, he's more of the bigger physical guy that they have on the right side. So I think, you know, if Brännström really wants to play the right side, he brings different elements than good Branson, Zaitsev, Brown. And there might be an opportunity for him to play on the right side, the side that he prefers. It's just, I just don't know if he's going to be given that opportunity. The Senators may look at Brännström as a guy that might not crack their top four because of Jake Sanderson coming or, you know, having too many puck movers in their top four. And they might look at him as a guy who has more value in the trade market than he does on the team.
I'd be blown away. What about Willanen, the name you didn't mention in there, who again kind of seems to be part of what looks to be a pretty clogged left side of the young defense?
Yeah, and he had an exceptional game, according to Brent Wallace, in some of the highlights that we saw from last night on the phone. He had a hat trick last night and was named the first star of the game. So, you know, he's a guy who hasn't played much over the last 2 years. And, you know, he was a guy that a lot of people were excited about as like a bottom pairing offensive power play guy. And maybe he has an opportunity to be more than that. And you know, like Mike Riley's a puck moving guy, but he's struggled kind of at the NHL level and he hasn't been consistent. And maybe there's an opportunity that by the end of the season, Willanen could sneak into the top four. But he's just one of those young kind of like unheralded pieces that Ottawa's added over the years. And I think there's an opportunity for him to showcase what he can do this season. And, you know, hopefully he has a healthy year and shows that he can be a good player for the Ottawa Senators.
The one thing that I do know about DJ Smith, and it stems obviously from his time in Toronto with Mike Babcock, who also felt the exact same way, it's lefties on the left and righties on the right, and they don't stray from it very often. We've seen it with the Olympic teams as well in terms of Babcock. But I look at what Ottawa has on the left side of that defense, and then I look at who each of them is paired with on the right side of that defense, and at some point, it feels like you got to be willing to give one of these guys on the left a chance to move over and be your number four on the right or something, mm-hmm. right? And do you think there's any chance we're going to see that this year? And if so, if DJ Smith is willing to move off that position, is Brännström the most likely to be the guy who gets that shot, or do you see them giving that chance to somebody else?
No, I think you're right. I think like Brännström could have the first opportunity because he has done it before, and he started in the NHL playing the right side. Yeah, it's a good question because, like, you know, you look at Gabranson, he's an impending free agent at the end of the season. Josh Brown hasn't really, you know, he's not a marquee name.
I keep seeing that Gabranson's going to be the Mathot to Shabbat's Carlson, and I'm just like, there's no chance of that happening, right? Like, Mathot was a much, in my opinion, Mathot was a much better version of that, right? We've seen Gudbranson long enough on enough teams now to know, all right, you should not be on anybody's top pair.
No, and I think that's a huge disservice to Mark Mathot in terms of, like, yes, evaluating him as a player, you know? Like, Eric Branson is, like, statistically one of the worst defensemen in the National Hockey League based off any advanced analytics metrics that you look at. Mm-hmm. And, like, it, to the same extent that Nikita Zaitsev is, right? Like, and, you know, like, Branson, great story, right? Charismatic local kid who comes back to his hometown team, very Mark Mathot. But I think Mark Mathot could move the puck. He was a physical guy who could move the puck and be a vocal leader. And it's I don't think it's the same at all, but I think there's a lot of similarities there that people just lazily slap together and then pin it back to him. But I'm hoping at some point that there will be an opportunity for Eric Brännström. I mean, it's a short and condensed season where teams are playing, you know, every second or third night. So I think injuries are going to happen, right? There's going to be bumps and bruises over the course of the year. And I think Brännström at some point is going to get an opportunity to play. And hopefully when he steps in the lineup, that he takes advantage of it. And we don't have to wonder what's going on with his future with the Ottawa Senators.
Right. As we look across what's going to be a super interesting and, at least on hockey Twitter, super divisive All-Canadian division this year, what do you expect, or what would you consider to be a successful season for the Senators? I think we all know where they're at in their cycle and, you know, what most people are predicting is going to happen. But even within that, what would make this, in your opinion, a successful year?
I think one of the odd wrinkles of the season is the schedule, right? It's kind of very baseball-like because Ottawa is going to be playing the same team 2, 3, sometimes 4 times in a row. So in a sense, it's almost like every series is going to be like almost like a mini playoff series.
There's a point, I think, in mid to late February where the Flames are here in Ottawa for 3, then Ottawa goes to Montreal for 1, and then goes to Calgary for 2 more. So you're going to see those guys 5 of 6 games. Like,
oh, the Kachucks are going to be hated. It's going to be awesome. You know, and it's just, if you look at, like, sure, maybe expectations for the Ottawa Senators this season aren't very high. Maybe everybody projects them to finish last. That's okay. It's not the end of the world.
Right.
But I think in terms of, like, actually integrating your young players into the roster, having these guys play, like, highly competitive games against, like, very good Canadian teams, I think with the exception of maybe Ottawa and maybe Winnipeg, whose blue line's decimated as well, mm-hmm. I think most of those teams have playoff aspirations. And, you know, you throw in this condensed schedule where the teams are playing each other so regularly, and it's just going to raise the stakes a little bit more. I think if you can integrate your players in the lineup, have young kids like Brady Tkachuk, Josh Norris, Tim Stützle kind of experience that and kind of get a feel for it, where, like, their opposition is essentially, like, every game means something. It's placement in the playoffs, or it's like the top 4 teams are getting in, and, you know, every point matters. And for these kids to, like, have that experience of playing these meaningful games against top level players like Elias Pettersson, Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, go through the list. It's going to be good for the development. It's not going to hurt them whatsoever.
Yeah, we had Jeff Viette on to do the Leaf side of this yesterday, and he and I had a brief conversation about how this is sort of an interesting prep for young players in terms of playoffs, because you're going to see, I think, the minimum amount that anybody's going to see another opponent in this division is 9 times. So even if they're not all back-to-backs, and there are going to be enough of those, but, you know, you play Edmonton twice and then you go see somebody else for 2 or 3 games, and then it's back to Edmonton for 3 more, and whatever might happen there, coaches are getting familiar with you and they're game planning against you in a way that doesn't normally happen in a regular season. And it will replicate a little bit a playoff series, and the fact that they know what you want to do on the power play and they know how your penalty kill works and how to key on your top guys and shut it down. I think it's going to be fascinating in that regard, just to watch some of the coaching that happens through this year and how teams start to play each other differently as the season moves on and you kind of get to know each other almost like a 7-game playoff series, just kind of stretched out over a couple months.
It's a great point. It's going to be awesome. And, you know, you talk about the pressures on some of the coaches and, you know, they're going to earn their money this year. They have to, because the stakes are pretty high. And even like a team like Toronto, where like the patience is starting to wear thin a little bit because they've had talented teams that can't like make it past the first round of the playoffs. And I think, you know, looking at the teams in this division, like I don't see a Tampa, I don't see a Boston. Right. No. So if Toronto can't run away with this division or at least advance this year, I think there's going to be some huge changes in that city, unfortunately, for them.
All right. I'm a little uncomfortable with that, but,
but there, well, you know what I mean? No, but like, sure, if you look at their core, like their core, there's only so many years that you can give a core the opportunity to change, right?
Yep.
And, or the opportunity to stay together. And at some point, like something has to give. And that's
they need
the way
to show something this year, whether it's a playoff round or two or run away with the division and just get goal lead in the first round. I think if they're not successful this year, yeah, absolutely, there will be changes. I don't think we're at a point yet where it will be at management, but I think Dubas will be pushed to, all right, one of those four forwards is out the door and we're going to try something different here. Like, I think there will be pressure there. What is something, and we'll get back to kind of the division at large here in a minute, but maybe something that I haven't asked about in terms of the Senators that you think is really interesting this year, or a storyline you're going to be keeping an eye on that maybe isn't drawing enough attention from anybody else? Kind of what's piqued your interest as a season-long kind of thing that for this team this year?
Oh, that's a loaded question. So many things. I think one of the things that really interests me that nobody's talking about that much is the pressure on management. I know it's like you listen to people talk about the Senators and projections, and everybody kind of expects them to finish at the bottom of the North Division. Like, mm-hmm. that's kind of like the expectation. But, you know, like every time that Ottawa is in a situation where the expectations go up a little bit and the team wants to be a little bit more competitive, the organization goes out and they make a deal that they don't necessarily have to make.
Right.
It's a Matt Duchene deal. It's a Bobby Ryan deal. It's a Derek Brassard deal. And, you know, they don't have a number one center. And I think, you know, if you're projecting out looking at this draft, I don't know if there is a number one center available in this draft. And I kind of wonder what the Senators are going to do. And, you know, we've talked about a couple of young assets like an Eric Brandstrom, a Logan Brown. They have a number of draft picks coming to them in the next couple of years. They have 4 second round picks spread out across the next 2 drafts. They have 2 first round picks spread out across the next 2 drafts. Mm-hmm. They have a number of trade chips that they can use to go out and try and get a good player. But this organization hasn't really ever shown a ton of patience just to like let things build organically. They always kind of go out and make like these short-term short-sighted deals to make the team more competitive in the future. And I kind of wonder, like I've talked about Pierre-Luc Dubois would be a great get for the Ottawa Senators, but I don't know. It seems from all reports that Jarmo Kekalainen isn't necessarily willing to move him for young futures. He wants like an NHL player who's right. of a similar age and ilk as Dubois. So I don't know if Ottawa's a fit in that regard, but I wouldn't be surprised if the organization tries to go out and make more, a splashy trade using some of these young trade chips that they have, because not all of them are going to play for the Ottawa Senators. So that's kind of like one of the things I'm kind of interested to see what happens. It might not happen this season. Might have to wait till like the next offseason, but I wouldn't be surprised. Pierre Dorion likes to trade, and he's done a lot of it over the last couple of years, and it's just one of those situations where I could see him trying to aim high on somebody and then kind of get a guy who's maybe not necessarily as good as Pierre-Luc Dubois to be the team's first line center.
You touched on something interesting there, and it reminded me a little bit about Lou in Toronto, and I you brought this up a week or two ago, maybe it was earlier than that, before Christmas, and you kind of touched on it again here now on how Pierre Dorion has done a pretty nice job, if he was going to have to dismantle this and tear it down and rebuild, of getting a lot back, but that's supposed to be the easy part, right? And a lot of GMs can do that. You can sell off good players for picks and prospects, and he's done that pretty well, but that maybe he's not the right guy to rebuild it, and because we've seen, as you referenced, the Duchene trade and moves like that where you just go, I don't know why you did that, right? Like, and it, I think it was on the heels actually of the Derek Stepan trade that you went into this on Twitter. And it reminded me, because everything's about the Leafs, of Lou in Toronto and how he sold off pretty well and he got rid of Dion. And thank you guys here in Ottawa for that. And the things went on. But then afterwards you go, oh, whoa, the Marlowe thing. And you can see it now on the island. He's trying to keep Barzal, but re-signing Matt Martin to long-term contracts and having to waive Leo Komarov because he gave him a long contract. And that maybe there's certain types of GMs that are better at one part of this than the other. Can you elaborate or just kind of, you know, expand on that a little bit in terms of your sense of whether Dorion is the right guy now that it's been torn down and we're kind of turning the corner? Is he the right guy to take a crack at this?
I don't know if it's as simple as just saying if he is or isn't the right guy doing this. I think a lot of people in the city or outside the city even will look at like Dorion's body of work or Brian Murray's body of work, and they'll see a guy who's made some good moves, and they'll see a guy who's made a lot of bad moves too. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of people say, well, he's been an average GM, but you know, he works for a terrible owner. So
yep.
We got to kind of keep that in mind too. So like, I just find a lot of people in the city and outside the city are really forgiving of the moves that this organization makes simply because of who the owner is and what the budget is and what the constraints and pressures are. And while I totally understand that whole sentiment, it doesn't preclude you from making the most informed decisions that you possibly can given your limited resources. Right. And, you know, like if you read any kind of analytics work or do any digging, you can identify red flags on any deal. Like the Matt Duchene deal, for example, was made when the team was like 6-2-3. They won a bunch of shootout and overtime games. Their puck possession numbers were terrible. And they were kind of just getting by. It was just one of those smoke and mirror shows where you knew the team wasn't particularly good.
Right.
And yeah, the team was coming off the 2017 Eastern Conference Final appearance, but they also had Clark MacArthur and Mark Mathot playing top six and top 4 minutes. And they replaced those players with Johnny Oduya and like Nate Thompson.
God, I forgot like, Johnny Oduya was here.
You know, like, and it's just one of those things where it's just like the team wasn't as good as the record. And, you know, you have to be able to like look at your team critically. You can't just say, hey, we reached the final this year. That's the high, you know, that high watermark is a true valuation of where our team is at. I think you have to take a more critical approach to assessing what you have under the table. And, under the hood. And with Ottawa, I just don't know if that's being done on a consistent level. Like they'll make deals and some of the deals are great. And then other ones are just head scratchers where you're like, okay, you traded a second round pick for Derek Stepan, who's coming off 230-point seasons and he's in the declining phases of his career.
Right.
Maybe Derek Stepan is a good ad, but like, why are you trading a second round pick to let the Arizona Coyotes out of cap hell? Like, mm-hmm. You know, like you could essentially wait till waivers and then pick up a guy like Matt Perreault off waivers, who's a former 30-point guy who's making similar money, and you'd be just as okay, who brings some leadership and everything else. And it wouldn't cost you anything. It just would have cost you money. And, you know, I think there is a tendency with this organization to throw young assets and picks in deals. They're principally motivated by money and just trying to keep the team as competitive as possible within a tight budget. And it's just not necessarily the best way of operating a small market team. I think if you're honest, with where Ottawa is, I mean, you can't like him or not, you can't do anything about Eugene Melnyk owning this team.
Right.
And you know, if he has a small budget, operate within that budget. Go get some analytics guys who are inexpensive, you know. Make them like do whatever you can to make the most informed decisions you can, because I think
Huge is going to get 6,000 fans in the building this year, I heard. So, I mean, it's in a way that none of the rest of us have been able to determine. So maybe he's just way ahead of us.
We can get into that a little bit later. But like, it just seems that there's all these moves that are made over the course of the year, and you just kind of scratch your head. Like, even like this is totally like a microcosm of Ottawa's problems. But you look at the lineup combinations that were used in practice today, and you see Alex Galchenyuk and Colin White on the fifth line.
The fifth line, yeah.
And you just kind of look at it and say, okay, so Alex Galchenyuk was signed as a one-year guy, as an unrestricted free agent. The team just lost Rudolph Bolsters, who was a controllable asset, who was cheap. And, you know, it's like you lost a guy for nothing so you could bench Alex Galchenyuk. like it doesn't make, like to me, it doesn't make any sense. Like
right.
play, just, I don't know. there's some stuff that they do. I just shake my head, and then, you know, they'll make some great deals. They'll make some great deals when the team's rebuilding. But like you said earlier, like those are the easiest deals to make. And I think the pressure is going to be on management. The pressure is going to be on ownership. You can't just draft a bunch of young kids and expect everything to work out great. Like the Rideau Canal is not made of chocolate. I don't care how big of an optimist you are, you know, like, you know, it's, you need more than just young kids to make this thing work and to win a cup. And, they just have to make better decisions on a player personnel level at the professional level. And it hasn't happened consistently over the past like 4 or 5 years. So, or even going back further, if you want to go back to the Brian Murray era, and the pressure is going to be on management and ownership to change that. And ownership's come out. They said that they're going to spend the money when the time is right. And starting in 2021, it's going to be a cap ceiling team. And, you know, I hope the fans hold them accountable to that. Like it's, you know, they're talking a big game. There's lots of bravado and everything else, but you got to hold these guys accountable if they're not doing their job.
Yeah, no argument here on that. And this is why, even for, you know, non-Senators fans, if you're not following Graham here on Twitter at Sixth Sens, it's the stuff like that that is super interesting, and maybe it goes a little beyond the, you know, in the moment thought that, okay, Derek, step on for a second, little veteran leadership or whatever, and then somebody slides and goes, okay, here's why this might be a red flag, or just don't, you know, just look a little bit deeper. And I don't know, I find that stuff super interesting. So worth a follow there. Let's expand out to the league, or the division at least, and just kind of how you see this shaking loose. You know, if I was to force you to rank the teams and who's going to get into the playoffs and who's not, kind of who do you like as we get ready to drop the puck here?
I think Ottawa and Winnipeg will be the bottom two teams. I just don't trust Winnipeg's blue line whatsoever. I mean, like Dylan DeMello is on their top pairing, and he was third pairing here in Ottawa. And that's not no fault of his own. That's just the coaching and everything else. But like I see those teams finishing bottom two, and then, you know, like injuries will obviously play a role and everything else. So it's hard to predict. But it, like if you're looking at the rosters right now, I think Toronto's at the top of the division. I could see a dogfight between like Montreal, Edmonton, and Vancouver for second. And then like Calgary's in the mix there as well. Like
you got Calgary behind them, eh?
Well, Calgary's got a lot of pieces that I really like. Mm-hmm. But they're like if one player goes down, like that's just not a deep. I just don't find them that deep.
Okay.
Like, they have some good like depth pieces. I just think if one of the big goes down, that team's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. I like their kind of balance throughout. And obviously now I've added a good goaltender. We'll see if he can be as good as last year. That remains to be seen. But I kind of have them there with Toronto battling for 1-2 and then Edmonton in behind them. But I think it's a balance thing. I don't love Edmonton's blue line and
no, neither do I.
It's yeah. Just, yeah. The firepower up front allows you to look past a lot of other things. So I got to tell you, and maybe we've talked about this the last time you were on, I can't remember, but I don't love Montreal the way a lot of people seem to love Montreal. I see a team that finished 24th last year, with 19 wins in 70 games, that, to me, downgraded on talent in the Domi for Anderson trade. I understand Anderson brings other things, and maybe more what Montreal needs. And then just some stuff. I don't love Joel Edmondson. I thought the Tyler Toffoli deal was really good. Really nice signing there. I just, you know, Nick Suzuki had a pretty good season last year, and Kotkaniemi was up and down, and then they had this really good kind of competitive 9 games in a summer bubble in August, and and to me, I just, maybe they will be as good as everybody says, but they're gonna have to show me first, and because right now that's a 24th place team with some minor upgrades from where I sit, and it's always, maybe Price makes them a second place team this year. He's capable of doing that, but we don't know which Price we're getting this year either. So
no, for sure. You know what they kind of remind me of is like those Buffalo teams from like the mid 90s that were like, they didn't have like that dynamic.
Yeah. The Donald Odette.
They're like one of those like greasy, like hardworking smaller teams.
Barnes and friends. Yeah. Maybe.
It's just like one of those weird teams. Like I think Brendan Gallagher is a hell of a player. Yes. Like he's probably one of the more underrated guys in the league. And you know, like Jeff Petrie, same thing. But you're right. Like they they do have their warts. I don't think there's a team. I think Toronto is probably the most well-rounded team in the division, but like there's you look at any other roster and there's warts.
It's
and,
flawed. Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's not like the, it's not like the other Eastern Division with like Boston and all the other teams,
just
like Tampa.
It's
Pittsburgh, just like
Washington,
Pittsburgh,
Philly,
Philadelphia. They're just going to kick the crap out of each other every night. And this one, it's, I think the North Division is going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be really competitive, but I don't think it's at that same high end level.
I think the parity is going to be great, like you're saying, but I don't think that's because everybody's stellar. I think maybe there's a bunch of flawed teams here that are going to make this, you know, really fun to watch.
Oh, for sure.
Outside of this division, and you referenced the East there or whatever, but what maybe is a storyline, or obviously our focus will be mainly north of the border here as we kind of move through the season, but what team maybe are you most interested to watch outside of that, or another storyline or player or something along those lines that you're interested in as we kind of move forward?
I'm kind of interested in Pittsburgh a little bit, not because of anything that's particularly going on right there. But at the same time, it's like they're an aging team. They've been on the top for a really long time. Jim Rutherford keeps tweaking every year like he always does. But like they feel like one of those teams, this window should be closed, but somehow they're still like really competitive and they're pushing for
that window wide open.
And you're just wondering like how long their window is going to be, because you look at guys like Crosby and Malkin, and you know those guys are both on the wrong side of 30 now, and like how long, you know, like 33 and 34 years of age, like how long can they keep it going and how long can they keep it afloat? And
I totally agree with you there, because Jim Rutherford, to me, if I was him, I would do exactly what he's doing. As long as I have those guys, I'm going for it until they literally can't skate anymore. But he's running out of pieces, right? And so every time that he has to take these swings, it's from a slightly weaker position every time. And you're signing a Jack Johnson or a Cody Ceci, or you're now trading your third round pick next year because you already traded your first and second, and you just can't quite get there. I would still be doing the same thing he's doing, but it, you can tell it's getting harder and harder.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, Tampa's an interesting story too, because like Kucherov's gone for the year, but they're already saying like he'll probably come back for the postseason.
Yeah, funny that.
Yeah, you know, it's like a little bit of cap circumvention at the same time, and you like you tip your hat to it because it's like,
yeah, I'm a Leaf fan. I don't get to get too mad at that. Right?
Like, you know what's going on, but you can't really do anything about it. But even like Chara in Washington's a really cool story.
Yeah,
I think because you know, like, there's a guy who left Ottawa and now he's leaving Boston, and he just wants to keep playing. And you know, Washington's one of those teams that's, you know, their window could be closing as well. So like, he'll be fun to watch. And
Colorado to me looks like that could be a lot of fun to watch, and they may win that division.
Yeah, and if Byram steps in too, like that's just a loaded team with so many good young players. And Carolina is another one. Like, Carolina is like one of those Toronto teams. It's like, you know, they've been good, kind of like under the radar, good for a while. They don't obviously don't have the media exposure as Toronto, so they're a little bit more under the radar, but they're like exceptionally good. It's just they haven't, you know, every time the postseason comes around, they just run into the wrong team at the wrong time, and it affects them.
They are that team that every year that you know, everybody says this is the year they're going to take, and they just haven't yet, similar to Toronto. So you're right, that could be a fun one too. They are that same division, though. Like, Jesus. Like,
I know.
I guess they're the Central, aren't they? Which one are they in? I think they end up in the Central with the Florida teams and then the Central.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So that'll be Dallas, Tampa, Carolina kind of running that show, you'd think. And
I'll tell you in a second here.
Funny to think that. And I mean, I get it. They had to name these things or whatever. But Tampa and Miami are in the same division as Dallas. And like,
I know. It's like the South. And then Columbus is there somehow. And yeah. Like Chicago and Detroit.
Detroit.
Like, okay, whatever.
The Discover Central Division. I just discovered this is a Central team. Yeah, it's strange, man. I don't know. But yeah, Carolina is one. I wonder whether Dallas can bounce back and kind of repeat what they had done. I still like some of their guys, but they have some pieces that are getting up there a little bit too. But
and even San Jose, like I know this is like going back to the Senators kind of attachment with Erik Karlsson, but I kind of would be interested to see like what he can do.
They can't be this bad again, right?
Like Martin Jones was terrible last season. Like,
right.
He was the worst 5-on-5 goaltender in the league last season. And, you know, they had their injury troubles and everything else. But then like a story comes out, like Evander Kane's story yesterday, where he might not play this season. You're like, holy, like, what's going on in San Jose?
But the year before that terrible season, were they not in the conference finals?
Yep.
So I don't expect them to rebound and just suddenly be this great powerhouse again. But man, I don't think they're that again. Like, there's got to be some middle ground, you'd think, in San Jose.
It's just one of those aging teams, right? Like, you never know. Even like the Islanders, right? Like, the Islanders had that historic run last year where nobody was really expecting. They kind of came out of left field. But that's a really aging team that's got a really flawed roster filled with like bad long-term deals. And you're kind of waiting for that to fall flat on its face. But wow, exactly. Exactly.
It's a lifetime achievement award. Yeah. Barry Trotz, unreal. I don't even know who's playing goal for that. I know Grice left. I guess Varlamov would still be there.
They have the young kid who's coming in.
Oh, that's right. Sorokin.
Yeah, you're right.
So look for both of them to put up a 930 this year in Barry Trotz's system.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, St. Louis could be interesting as well. They replaced Peter Angelo with Torrey Krug. Mike Hoffman just signed there. Like, there's a lot of interesting stories like around the league, and we're so hockey starved. I'm just excited to see it going again. So even Taylor Hall in Buffalo, like that's kind of like a weird place to land.
Yeah. I was looking at the schedule, before it fired up for Wednesday night when the season started. I'm like, Pittsburgh and Philly at 5:30. That's stupid. I mean, I'll watch it, but it's stupid. But that's where I'm at with hockey. It's like, oh, I see. You're just trying to space them out and get me to watch as many games as I can. And it'll work. Like, that's going to happen. So
I think Philadelphia could be a really good team this year, too. Like, it's going to be wide open, man. Like, I don't know if there's as many favorites as some people say. So it should be fun.
We haven't touched we haven't really touched on the monster in the room, which is any of these predictions could go out the window on day two when you find out, this team I predicted to do this and this just lost their number one center, top defenseman and goaltender to COVID for 2 weeks and, just completely flips the standings upside down, right?
So you see what's happening in the NBA and stuff. And you kind of wonder, like, if this is going to work.
Yeah.
So
you make the best predictions you can, but they could be all out the window in a couple of days, depending how that all shakes loose.
Oh, exactly.
Was there anything else you thought we should touch on in this one before we wrap her up?
No, man, I think that's good for me. I don't know. Unless you want to keep going, I can keep going if you want. But
I think it's going to be interesting to watch. We won't have to wait long. Back-to-back games, Friday and Saturday, Leafs and Sens in front of a less than typical raucous crowd that normally fills the Canadian Tire Center when those two teams face off. So that'll be disappointing. But I think, I don't know about you, when I watched the World Juniors, I thought TSN did an amazing job of making you forget that there weren't fans in it, right? The getting away, obviously, from you wouldn't pan the crowd or whatever, but just keeping the cameras proper and the fan noise was a little less grading maybe than it was in the bubble when they were just trying to figure it out. I'm sure having a little time to work on it.
For sure. And I mean, like, you watch the World Juniors when they're not held in Canada and you see those games from time to time, right? Where there's nobody in the crowd. So I don't think that's a huge separation there. But watching the NHL hockey, it feels a little bit different. It's not the same. It's definitely not the same. And I know there's some arenas that are anticipating having some kind of crowd for the games, but it's totally different. But hopefully on Friday and Saturday night we hear that obnoxious horn that you complain so much about. So.
Exactly, just echoing through the and that to me is the difference. It's not drowned out by the cheering crowd. It's just same as it was in Edmonton for the World Juniors. Like, god damn it, that's annoying, bouncing around off the what did you think? We might as well touch on it. And for those who didn't catch it, because it didn't last long, on Tuesday, Eugene Melnyk put up a tweet sometime around noon, I guess it was, saying, I've submitted a plan that with rapid testing and social distancing and masks would allow for up to 6,000 fans at Canadian Tire Center. That was just before Doug Ford held his provincial press conference to say, yeah, we're hitting a state of emergency and we're closing things down even more. And then suddenly Eugene's tweet was deleted. What did you make of the whole thing, man?
Everybody's going to dump on Eugene. That's just kind of the nature of what happens, especially with the pandemic and everything else going on. But like, this is a story that he talked about openly on like Toronto radio, morning radio, like a few weeks ago. So it's just a rehash of that story. It's not like this isn't new information. Like, he's had these plans in his back pocket for a long time and he submitted them to the province. We knew about this a long time ago. It's just the timing of his tweets this afternoon coinciding with Premier Ford's lockdown. It's just poor timing, and it's just, it kind of blew up in his face, and people like to dunk on Eugene Melnick.
So what do you think was up with the league? Did the league tell him take that down?
I think it's just his own PR people kind of getting a hold of him and saying, hey, we should take that down because it's dumb, insensitive to the times that are going. You know, it's just the timing of it, it's just terrible. But like, Bruce Garriak had that article in the Ottawa, the Post Media, so like Ottawa Citizen and Ottawa Sun earlier this week. So it's not even a new article that he was like linking to.
Right.
So it's like there are plenty of things to dunk on Eugene Melnick for, and this is just kind of small potatoes right now. So.
Well, to me, the thing with him, and this isn't a rip, he's immune suppressed. He's obviously had the liver issue and I've had a kidney transplant. I'm immune suppressed. And I'll tell you what, if I was sitting comfortably in the Barbados isolating there, I might be fine with 6,000 people in Ottawa filling my building and getting a little cash back in my wallet, but I wouldn't be one of the people there. And so to me, that's the reason for me in this case, on top of the dumb things that he's said or done in the past that people love to dunk on him for, this one to me was very transparent. Unless you're going to be there in the building too, man, you're asking other people to take a risk that you're not going to take. And to me, that's the transparent part of it where you go, get out of here with this. Right. At least that was my read on it. Just knowing, you know, similar medical situations and this and that, I wouldn't be there if I was him. And I know Barbados is lovely.
He came out on the radio a few weeks ago and he said, you know, like, we can break even if we have 6,000 fans in the game, socially spaced, we've done the modeling, we've done everything right. And maybe they can. Maybe they can have 6,000 people in the building. And you look at the NHL talking about how this season's going to cost them $1 billion.
Yeah.
And everybody wants revenue. You look at the helmet ads and everything else, and you understand that, like, you know, people whose margins are pretty bad, they need revenue. And like, I totally understand why Melnick wants to get 6,000 people in the stands. It's just the timing of him trying to promote it at this time is just, it wasn't the right time. But to me there's so many other better ways to dunk on Eugene Melnick than to like worry about an article that was written about a while ago or something he said on Toronto radio a few weeks ago. It's just none of that information today was new. It's just one of those situations where it's just the timing was absolutely horrendous.
He does love to stub his toe. So we'll call it another one of those. Tell the people where they can find you on social media and find your work.
You could find my stuff on social media at Sixth Sense on Twitter. And I'd have to look at the link. I think if you just go to thesixthsense.com, you can find my stuff.
Right on. We will, of course, share those links in the show notes for this episode. Always fun to catch up with you, man. Appreciate you doing this. And hopefully, you know, we get a couple weeks into the season, see how everything's looking, and we can look at this again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And hopefully Ottawa's 2-0 after this weekend, and Toronto can be freaking out. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Maybe I'll go back and edit this so you don't have the final word. I don't know how to let that happen. Now, we are on Twitter and Instagram at Talkan Audio, Facebook.com/Talkan Audio. Hope you'll subscribe wherever you're listening to this one. If you want to catch the Leafs side of the coin here, we did have, as I mentioned previously, Jeff Viette from faceoffcircle.ca and Leafs Twitter. He was on Wednesday morning, so you can check that out. And on Friday morning, our friend Michaela Schreider returns to co-host the pod, so look forward to those as well. All of them at tallcanaudio.com. Until then, Graham, thanks for doing this.
No, thanks, Matt. Really appreciate being on.
And we will talk to the rest of you all on the next one.
That was a hot mess inside a dumpster fire, inside a train wreck. It was a disgrace.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.